This is Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Yesterday, the Iowa legislature convened, and in a moment, Governor Terry Branstad will deliver his 17th condition of the state address. He'll lay out his priorities for the legislative session. He'll also be releasing his proposed budget for the fiscal year that begins July 1st today. We'll bring you live coverage of the speech courtesy of Iowa Public Television, followed this morning by analysis with Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa, and Joyce Russell, Iowa Public Radio State House reporter. The governor has said that the focus of the speech today will be jobs and education. We're expecting to hear the governor's proposal on reducing taxes on commercial and industrial properties. And on the education front, the governor's expected to talk about his proposal to make sure that students can't move on from the third grade until they've passed literacy tests. He's also expected to propose end of course and college readiness programs for high school students. Again, we'll be listening to the speech live this morning, courtesy of Iowa Public Television, followed by analysis from Iowa Public Radio. We'll join now Iowa Public Television and Iowa Public Radio's Dean Borg in the lead up to the speech.
Some legislators are proposing raising the gas tax. But Governor Branstad says this isn't the time to be increasing fuel taxes. You see the governor now being escorted to the lectern, being greeted by Craig Paulson, the Speaker of the House, shaking hands, pausing just a moment before stepping to the lectern because he'll await the introduction from the President of the Iowa Senate, Jack Kibbe, who's about to speak. Before the governor came in, the governor's family, Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, justices of the Iowa Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals and the State Executive Council were all ushered in, so they're here in this very crowded chamber this morning. Here's Jack Kibbe, the President of the Iowa Senate.
It is my pleasure to introduce the governor for his condition of the state message. Governor, we've probably never had weather like this on another state of the state message in history. So we ought to write that on the wall. So it's my pleasure, and let me introduce you, the Honorable Governor Terry Branstad.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. You're just excited.
Madam Lieutenant Governor, Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, leaders, justices and judges, legislators, elected officials, distinguished guests, family, friends, and fellow Iowans. Today, it is my honor to stand before you and deliver this, my 17th State of the State address in this great chamber. And while 17 doesn't sound like such a big number to me, my wife, Chris, would say, I just don't know when to quit talking. I stand here today older and wiser than during my first such opportunity those years ago, but with a heart full of pride, a head full of ideas, and with a state full of new opportunities to grow and prosper as never before. Last year, we, like many other states, faced serious budget challenges and unacceptably high levels of unemployment. 89 programs were funded with one-time money that was due to run out to the tune of $900 million. In other words, it amounted to nearly one-sixth of our entire general fund budget. More than 100,000 Iowans were out of work and seeking jobs, and thousands more had simply given up hope. My charge to each of us was simple, yet significant: to restore predictability and stability to our state budget, to ensure our decisions were sustainable for the long term, to set the stage for a period of unprecedented economic expansion. Together, we took these challenges, as Iowans always do. And while the process was messy, as it always is. And though none of us got everything we sought, as we never do, we took the necessary steps to put the state's fiscal house back in order, ended our dependency on one-time revenue, funded a balanced budget using ongoing revenue, and passed a biennial budget that funds most areas for 2 years. Thank you. Here in Iowa, we're a model for the nation on how Republicans and Democrats can work together for the common good of our people. Iowans deserve a budget that works, a budget that focuses on the essentials, a budget that reflects the character and the ideals of Iowa's hardworking taxpayers. And together, we deliver just that. So take this moment before the hard work of this session begins and congratulate your fellow legislators for a job well done, as I congratulate each of you. Now, with our fiscal house much improved, our fiscal year 2013 budget already substantially completed, we have a tremendous opportunity to focus the next few months on two critical priorities. First, creating new jobs and careers for Iowans to significantly raise family incomes. And second, adopting common sense solutions for our schools to give our children a world-class education. We must share the urgency of Iowans to revitalize our economy and improve our schools. We must commit long-term to make Iowa ready to support the jobs and careers of the future, the very careers that will keep Iowans home and bring new economic opportunities to our state. This past year, we took the first steps towards improving Iowa's economic health. Together, we created the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress, which will lead our state's efforts to encourage entrepreneurs and small businesses. In addition, I signed an executive order that requires a jobs impact statement on any proposed administrative rule. These are just the first steps on our path towards renewed prosperity that brings greater opportunity to all Iowans. While improvement is being made, there's still much work to be done, and it's going to take the cooperation of every member in this chamber to provide the opportunities that Iowans deserve. The all-or-nothing politics that often prevents the leaders from making progress on many important issues in Washington, D.C. and in other state capitals does not have to happen here. In Iowa, we have a shared responsibility to do our work differently, to work in the best interests of all Iowans, and to shed the partisanship that makes good policy so elusive. The simple truth is, Iowa no longer competes against other states to attract new jobs, careers, and economic development and investment. We now compete in a worldwide economy. We must compete with Brazilian ethanol, with Chinese production of technology, and with every other emerging nation ready to claim our economic mantle. I have seen firsthand the economic and educational growth around the world. This past September, I traveled to Korea, China, and Japan as part of a trade and investment mission. While in Beijing, I met with Vice President Xi Jinping. Vice President Xi actually visited Iowa in April of 1985 as a Hebei Province party official. He's now the vice president, and later this year he'll become the president of China. Out of that meeting, one thing was very clear. For Iowa to compete in the future, we must compete globally. On that trip, I met with companies in each country that I visited. I was able to communicate a message that Iowa is open for business and poised for growth, a message that Iowa is full of hardworking citizens who are ready to work. As a result of those efforts, we convinced a South Korean company, CJ, to invest $324 million in the Fort Dodge area and bring 180 great jobs to Iowa. However, companies... However, companies abroad should not be the sole source of our growth. American companies have seen the work that we have done collectively to enhance stability in our state through our fiscal discipline. As a result, numerous companies have announced their relocation or expansion plans in Iowa. Cargill purchased the Tate and Lyle plant in Fort Dodge and will create over 100 new jobs in Webster County and provide another market for Iowa corn. Alcoa is investing nearly $300 million in their Davenport factory, where they will begin producing automotive aluminum to meet the rising demand for lighter and more fuel-efficient vehicles. The combination of our strong agriculture, bioscience, manufacturing, and financial sectors means Iowa is better positioned than most states for economic expansion. But I believe being better is not good enough. We must strive to be the best. I'm convinced that Iowa stands at the precipice of major economic expansion, but that expansion is not guaranteed. Our opportunity for unparalleled growth is like the opportunity that a good Iowa field affords a farmer. But work must be done before a harvest can be reaped. Our job creators are ready. The question is, are we? Are we ready to plant the seeds for growth and prosperity? If the answer is yes, and the answer must be yes, then we must develop the permanent tools that job creators, career builders, and hardworking Iowans so critically need. And that's why today I'm proposing a 4-point plan of action, a focused initiative designed to help create the jobs we need today and the careers that we need tomorrow. The first piece of my action plan should be of no surprise to anyone. This year, I will submit to the General Assembly a revised plan to reduce commercial and industrial property taxes by 40% over the next 8 years. Commercial property taxes in Iowa are the second highest in the nation. And I believe there is an agreement within this chamber that these taxes must be reduced, not because they cost businesses too much money, but because they cost Iowans jobs. What has been lacking in this discussion, I believe, is an understanding of the consequences for small business owners who struggle to keep their doors open and their workers employed due to this back-breaking business burden. Today, sitting with my family, is Ying Saw. I met Ying at the Iowa Immigrant Entrepreneurial Summit. She's a leader who's helped hundreds of immigrant entrepreneurs start successful businesses in Iowa, including her own. Ying and nearly 500 other Iowans met to discuss their experience in starting businesses and their dreams for success here in Iowa. I was honored to address their summit and to recognize 125 immigrant entrepreneurs who started a new business in just last year here in the state of Iowa. Ying, thank you. Ying is a relatively new American citizen. Ying has a growing CPA business, but she does not own her own office space. Rather, she leases the property, and she, like thousands of other small business owners across Iowa, feels the brunt of our high property taxes through the net leases, wherein she pays the full cost of the property taxes attributable to her footprint. Ying, we're proud of you. And you represent thousands of other hopeful small business owners, Iowans who are in most need of commercial property tax relief, these startup small businesses. Well, thank you. Will each of you commit to permanent property tax relief solution for Ying and for all of her fellow small business owners and the tens of thousands of Iowans seeking jobs? Passing our plan will give Iowa business owners permanent relief and a fighting chance to compete. In addition, our plan prevents a shift to other classes of property by limiting local government spending and by cutting in half the annual growth limit for residential and agricultural property. The second piece of my action plan is to give our Iowa Economic Development Authority the tools it needs to create our job, to help lead our job creation efforts. Last year, the legislature directed us to create a replacement for the Grow Iowa Values Fund, and we are proposing a new $25 million annual investment in our High Quality Jobs Program. The High Quality Jobs Program has a proven record of success and a documented return on investment of $2 in new tax revenue for every $1 invested. This direct assistance component gives the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress an important tool in attracting high-quality businesses and careers to Iowa. In addition, my proposal will be structured so that the state investments in this program will decline over time, and so the program will be self-funding within 10 years as a direct result of the jobs that it brings to Iowa. The third component of my Jobs and Careers Action Plan will encourage those small businesses that supply key components to our strong manufacturing sector to grow their facilities and create new jobs in Iowa. Often, major manufacturers have large supply chains filled with companies that produce vital components for the anchor manufacturer. Manufacturing must remain an important part of our diversified Iowa economy. I will offer legislation that removes the barriers that discourage suppliers from bringing their businesses closer to their best Iowa customers. We have major anchor manufacturers like John Deere and Waterloo. Let's develop a supply chain cluster wherein surrounding towns attract those smaller support businesses that feed John Deere. Without question, the jobs that such suppliers will bring to places like Hudson, LaPorte City, Parkersburg, and Denver are equally as important to those communities as the jobs that John Deere provides to the citizens of Waterloo. The final piece of this jobs and careers puzzle involves the dilemma faced by many Iowa rural communities when a local anchor business is put up for sale. When hometown businesses are sold to out-of-town, out-of-state, or out-of-country buyers, the local community often suffers. We must work to keep Iowa companies in Iowa, even when an ownership change takes place. This is not just a tool for Iowa businesses. It's a tool for Iowa communities. Iowa communities where these companies represent so much more than jobs, where these companies represent our families, friends, and our way of life. Many of these companies have operated in Iowa for years, operated by owners committed to the local way of life. And when those owners wish to retire, they must have options to keep their companies local. I'm proposing legislation that will encourage the formation of employee stock option plans to encourage the sale of these local businesses to the very employees who have made the company a profitable success. Our plan will encourage more Iowans to own a stake in their company, to reap a greater share of the fruits of their own labor, and to help protect the quality of life in their community. Employee ownership is great for the Iowa communities in which these businesses, jobs, and careers exist. My four-point action plan to create jobs. With that, we need today. It'll help us create the jobs we need today and the careers that we need tomorrow. And it is essential that we have your bipartisan support to get this done. But we can't leave any discussion about Iowa's future without focusing on our most precious natural resource, our children. With four young granddaughters, I understand the importance of commitment, a commitment at this time when new technology and other forces are rapidly reshaping the labor market. Our children's future depends on whether they learn the knowledge, life skills needed to succeed in a global economy and be well-informed, good citizens of the 21st century. Our state's future depends on whether the quality of our schools matches the best-performing schools anywhere in the world. Today, we have with us in the gallery students from Van Meter, Ankeny, and Capitol View Elementary here in Des Moines. I ask them to be here because today we take a crucial step towards ensuring that they have opportunities to pursue their dreams by being among the best educated anywhere in the world. Thank you, students. The bottom line is, education must be a greater priority in our state, because if our schools are not the best, then we will fail our young people and those young Iowans who follow them. Last week, Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds and I unveiled our updated education reform blueprint. It is a product of nearly a year of hard work. That work included an education summit that brought together the best minds from Iowa, the nation, and the world. Then it was followed by a release of the initial blueprint to start a statewide conversation on how to give our kids the best education. At that point, we hit the road to hold an unprecedented number of education town halls to engage students, parents, teachers, job seekers, and other Iowans in a true give-and-take dialogue about the future of Iowa's education system. With the final step being revising the blueprint into the actual reforms that are before you now. Here are some of the steps we need to take together to turn Iowa's good schools into world-class schools. One, we need a great teacher in every classroom and a great principal in every building. And that starts by being more selective in who becomes an educator. A B college grade point average for admission to Iowa's teacher preparation programs is not asking too much. Two, all prospective teachers seeking a state license should demonstrate content and teaching mastery to assure they are ready for the crucial work of teaching our children. Three, school administration manager program should be changed to provide more time for principals to be instructional leaders. Other staff can take on some of the management tasks to free principals to observe and coach teachers in their classrooms. Four, Iowa Department of Education will continue to improve the Iowa Core, our state standards for math, science, English, and social studies. But well-rounded, healthy students need more than just these core areas. The department will work with educators to develop new standards for music and other fine arts, character education, physical education, entrepreneurship education, applied arts, and foreign languages. Five, new kindergarten assessments will assure that students start kindergarten ready to learn and leave prepared to flourish in first grade. Sixth, end of course tests in core subjects will demonstrate that high school students are ready to graduate. These will be designed with teachers and will emphasize not just content, but being able to apply it. Seven, all juniors should take a college entrance exam, and the state will cover the cost. In addition, they should have the option of taking a work skills readiness test. This will tell us whether Iowa students are college and career ready for life after high school. Eight, let's assure that children can read by the end of third grade. Otherwise, they will fall further and further behind. An intensive focus on literacy means working closely with families and providing more support for reading and writing in schools, starting in preschool, continuing through kindergarten, first, second, and third grade. Because reading is so essential for later success in school, it's just unfair to promote an illiterate child. Nine, Iowa has some highly innovative schools, and we should encourage more schools to be innovative. Youngsters need more opportunities to engage in real-life experiences, including internships in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Doing well in these subjects is the gateway to fast-growing fields with some of the best-paying jobs, whether students are headed for career training or a 2- or 4-year college. To encourage such efforts, Iowa should establish an Innovation Acceleration Fund. Schools and partners will identify education problems and innovative solutions. Competitive grants will fund the best ideas, which can then be scaled up statewide. 10. Online learning that complements learning in the traditional classroom should be promoted. So should competency-based learning that personalizes education for each child and begins the process of moving away from the time-based industrial model for education. Let's do all of this and more for our children with a bipartisan consensus, that will stand the test of time. Don't Iowa students deserve a world-class education? We have a decade of hard work ahead of us. So let's get to work, because this is not about this administration or the next or the one after that. It's about our children's future and our state's prosperity and growth. Let's work together on a bipartisan basis to put in place common sense solutions that are sustainable by adapting best practices that work and by innovating to find new approaches that fit Iowa. Let's work together to continuously improve, because that's what the highest performing school systems do to give their children a world-class education. Let's work together to continuously improve, because Iowans will hold us accountable. The solutions I've outlined today are about the future. They are about ensuring the American dream and the Iowa way of life will be passed on to our children. Imagine filling Iowa's main streets with thriving businesses and busy restaurants and happy customers. Imagine creating the kind of long-term careers that keep young Iowans home and attract those who left to come back to their roots. Imagine schools among the best in the world, providing our children and grandchildren with endless opportunities to pursue their dreams. These are not empty aspirations. Rather, they are part of a grand vision for restoring a healthy Iowa. As Lieutenant Governor and I traveled to all 99 counties last year, one thing was absolutely clear to us: Iowa must strive to be the best. Where in other parts of the nation, uncertainty has become the new reality. It is imperative that we make Iowa the center for stability and innovation. And let us never forget, as we work together for these goals, Iowans are going to hold us accountable. We have an obligation to exceed their expectations, to begin building on our foundation for growth. I believe our aspirations for a better tomorrow can and will ignite our capacity to innovate. So let's be innovative today. Let's provide the permanent tools that our small businesses and hardworking taxpayers so critically need. Let's commit to new jobs and career opportunities for all Iowans. Let's give our children the best education in the world. Let us, Republicans and Democrats, rural and urban, all Iowans, become a beacon of hope for the rest of the nation and show them how a motivated people, working together with the best interests of our children in our hearts and a set of new tools in our hands, can solve our common problems and bring Iowa unprecedented economic expansion, unparalleled economic and educational opportunities. That is our challenge. That is our mission. That is our obligation. Thank you. God bless you. God bless the great state of Iowa.
You've been listening to Governor Terry Branstad deliver his Condition of the State Address on Iowa Public Radio, courtesy this morning of Iowa Public Television. And joining us now is Chris Larimer. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And in a little while, Joyce Russell from Iowa Public Radio, our State House reporter, will also be joining us for some analysis. Right now, I think she's talking to some Democrats to get some response to the speech. But Chris, let's start with you. Did you hear anything surprising this morning?
Maybe surprising for, I guess, how focused it was. It was certainly just a two-pronged speech. I mean, we were talking about property taxes and education, and that was it. I was a little surprised. You know, a lot of reports lately speculating about what Governor Branstad was going to say. We're talking about, you know, gas tax, certainly mental health reform. A lot of that was left off. He didn't talk about, you know, some of the improving economic conditions. If we look back to prior to the 2011 state of the condition of the state address, he didn't talk about, you know, that the unemployment rate is continuing to decline. So I think it was surprising how focused it was.
Yes, just he said that in the press conference yesterday. It was going to be jobs and education, and he certainly only talked about jobs and education.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Of course, we all remember the big budget battle last year as the legislative session tried to come to a close to pass this two-year budget. How much wiggle room does the governor have within this year's budget proposal?
Well, the way the two-year budget was structured last year, there's still some things left to be decided, but, you know, they had the budget for fiscal year 2012, which we're in right now, and they basically appropriated about 85% to 86% of the budget for fiscal year 2013. So they really don't have a lot of room in terms of as far as new programs. You know, every year Iowa starts with a budget gap. You know, as far as the amount of money we expect to pay or expect to pay out in terms of programs and the amount of money we're going to take in. The budget gap's relatively small this year, looking at previous years. But again, if you have 86% of the budget essentially decided, there's not a lot of wiggle room.
Well, and I was looking at some analysis before the speech from the Des Moines Register, and their number crunching came up with a proposal that would spend $230 million more in the upcoming budget year. Does the governor have the ability to do that?
Yes, he does. You know, he certainly has to still remain within the requirements of the state, which require a balanced budget, of course, and, you know, spending only 99% of the budget as determined by the Revenue Estimating Conference, which looks to be about $6.4 billion, I think, if we look at the December report. And so he does have the power to do that, but it's going to be very tight again.
Well, let's start with talking about his jobs promotion plan. I think that the education part of the speech is going to get a lot more attention. So let's get the jobs part out of the way. And again, you mentioned that it was primarily about property tax. He said that he will submit to the General Assembly a revised plan to reduce commercial and industrial property taxes by 40% over the next 8 years. He also said that he believes he has the support in the chamber to do that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. You know, last year he tried to do 40% over 5 years, and that was that ended up dying in the Senate. So 40% over 8 years, we'll see if he can do it. I think the key for many Democrats is going to be what's going to be the effect on local government, what's going to be the effect on residential property rates. Looking at the Des Moines Register today, you know, they went a little bit more detail than the governor did during his speech today, but that proposal outlined in the Des Moines Register talked about, you know, limiting local government increases, which is what Branstad said today, but also putting that up to a vote, saying if they're going to raise property tax, it has to be put to a vote to citizens. And to me, that suggests you're just injecting even more politics into this debate. And so I think there's bipartisan support to certainly get it done. Republicans and Democrats want to get it done. They want to avoid the 2011 session, which I think for many legislators was not as productive as they wanted. You know, they want to avoid these drawn out battles. And so if they can get agreement on something like property tax, and if he's willing to expand it out to 8 years, that might be something they're willing to look at.
Well, and again, to go back to budgeting and spending, spreading it out over 8 years may impact the budget less, as we would see the revenue fall less significantly.
Exactly. And you're looking at, you know, compensating local governments less if you spread out that cost.
Well, let's look at the rest of his job creation proposals. There didn't seem to be that much here. I mean, the second piece of the action plan was to, quote, give the new Iowa Economic Development Authority the tools it needs to lead the job creation efforts. And that's basically moving money around.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. The first point on his jobs creation program was probably the most specific. Points 2, 3, and 4 were extremely vague. And I think points 2, 3, and 4 are really getting back to his campaign promise from 2010 when he talked about creating, you know, 200,000 new jobs over the next 5 years. And the education part of it was something that was talked about last session. So I think he's trying to hit on some of these other bullet points that came up during the campaign and the 2011 session. But I think, you know, points 2, 3, and 4 about, you know, high-quality jobs program, small businesses growing for new jobs and trying to keep businesses from leaving Iowa, those are all things that I think all legislators will agree on, but there wasn't a lot of meat in the details at this point.
Well, we're going to move on to education points. There was a lot more in the speech about his education proposals. And as I mentioned before, I think that we will get a lot more response about the education proposals. But as you're listening, as you listen to the governor's speech, as you're listening to Chris Larimer right now, share your reaction to the governor's address with us. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I am talking with Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Joyce Russell from Iowa Public Radio will be joining us shortly. So let's move on to the education proposals. Mm-hmm. And the governor gave us a 10-point plan on education. And one of the very first things he talked about was making sure that we strengthen our standards for teachers in this state, saying that we need to have higher admission standards for our teacher preparation programs, that all prospective teachers seeking a state license should demonstrate content and teaching mastery. What is he really proposing here? What changes?
Well, I think the first one was just, you know, point one, talking about that we need to be more selective for teachers and having a B average or a 3.0 GPA average to become a teacher. And with that, you know, talking about content and teaching mastery, I'm not really sure what exactly that means, but it certainly seems to suggest something about the curriculum. And so for the school, the Regents universities or any schools that are training teachers, these are going to be big challenges. And these are things that Governor Branstad is going to have to reach out to the educational institutions in the state to talk about. How are we going to restructure the curriculum? How are you going to change admission standards? I think we can all agree that we want high-quality teachers. But once you get down to the details, this could be something that could be somewhat contentious. And actually, I see the sort of these 10 points of education plans being something that, you know, the legislators are going to talk about a lot this session, but I would expect more progress on the property tax side of the condition of the state this speech this morning than on the education side.
Well, in talking about these new standards for teachers, there was no mention of compensation to reflect increased standards. I'm sure that will be a contentious issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you're obviously talking about more money. And again, if we're already talking about a very tight budget going into this year, that's going to be extremely contentious. And again, legislators are coming into this session. They want to avoid all of those drawn-out battles that we had in 2011. They do not want to be in session until June, let alone May. You know, and of course, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is redistricting in the 2012 election. So I think they're going to try to avoid any sort of contentious issue like teacher compensation.
Well, and on the subject of teacher compensation, he does talk a little bit about a changing role for principals, saying that they should spend more time in the classroom working with students and working with teachers, and that other staff members could take on more management tasks. Again, that's a compensation question within schools.
It's absolutely a compensation question. And it was maybe a bit of a surprise, you know, talking about having principals become leaders in teaching. He's going to raise a lot of flags for folks who think that it should be local governments deciding how to structure school districts, or how to structure school systems, or how to define roles for teachers and principals.
If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking right now about the governor's proposals for education that he just laid out in his condition of the state address, his 17th condition of the state address. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. What did you hear that you liked? What did you hear that makes you a little bit nervous? We'd love to hear your response. 866-780-9100. Something that he talked a lot about in a couple of different ways at the kindergarten level, at the third grade level, and in high school was making sure that students are ready to go on to the next grade. He said that we need a new kindergarten assessment to make sure kids are ready to start kindergarten and to make sure that kids are ready to go on to first grade. He wants a literacy test to make sure that no student can pass on to the fourth grade without proving that they are literate. And he also talked about things that we need to do to make sure that our high school students are ready to move on to college and into the workplace. It sounds like there are a lot of new assessment standards that he'd like to put into place.
Yes, and I think that again can be a point of contention because it really comes down to the staff at each school district in terms of administering those tests. He did point out that the state would pay for college entrance exams for all juniors. And I think that's probably a step in the right direction, at least having the state pay for this. But again, you know, if you're administering these exams, that's a day out of the school year that students are going to have to be taking these exams. And you have to think about how are you going to compensate local school districts for bringing these exams in and having students focus on these.
Something that I picked up on having not very long ago interviewed school consultant Jamie Vollmer, who comes out of the Fairfield area. He's written a book called Schools Cannot Do It Alone. And one of the things that he talks about extensively in his book and in the speeches that he gives, and I know that he's been consulting with the administration, is moving us away from the time-based industrial model of education. And one of the points that Jamie Vollmer makes is that we have never changed the amount of time that we expect students to learn things in, although we have changed a whole lot about what we expect students to learn during that time. And he thinks that school years, school advancement should be more fluid. It sounded to me, on the surface, it sounds like the governor is saying that students should be held back more often, honestly. Mm-hmm. It also sounds like he's taking that advice into account, and it sounds like he wants perhaps to make this time scale in Iowa a little more fluid. Are you picking up on that?
Yes, a little bit. But, again, I think that's if he starts talking about changing the length of the school year, changing the length of a school day, that's going to bog the session down incredibly. That's going to be a very political issue. And I think that's something that, can get started this session, but I don't see that as something that can be brought up and completed in a single session. My guess is that's going to carry over into 2013.
Bill is on the line from Iowa City at 866-780-9100. Hello, Bill.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's your response?
Well, I think the one comment on the third grade reading skill, we're all getting nervous and concerned that third graders will be left back and they won't be forwarded on. I think it's interesting to know that when rules are made, all of a sudden focus is given. And you can't wake up in third grade and say, oh, this kid can't read. You need to be figuring out in kindergarten and first grade, oh, this student is having struggles with reading. We better focus on reading with this kid. We can't sit there and say at the end of third grade, oh, they can't read.
So
we
Bill,
need to be looking.
Right. Bill, what's your response to what the governor had to say? I mean, I think most of our schools do assessments throughout kindergarten, first, second, third grade. So I think that there are not many teachers who would be shocked by a student's reading skills in third grade. But what is your reaction to what the governor said?
I think the governor wants to make a rule that says we're not going to pass kids on unless they can read properly, and I don't think we should fear it as a public and as a parent. We should welcome motivation to provide something better. You know, the one scary thing that you didn't hear in the governor's speech is that he didn't talk anything about what the Iowa school systems need to do about integrating technology into the educational process. That has me concerned.
All right, Bill, thank you so much for your response today. And Chris, can you respond to Bill?
Well, I think, you know, he's right in the sense that you're talking more about assessments, you're talking more about focusing on reading. But I think, like what you said, you know, the governor talked about having more assessments in kindergarten, more assessments in first grade. So I think it's just more of an ongoing focus on reading. You know, part of the governor's speech, you know, transitioning from his talk on property taxes to education was just talking about competing in, you know, against the world, really, in terms of education, and talking about opening up trade and that you need a world-class education. And so I think he's just trying to get more of an ongoing focus on assessments and more of a focus on, improving standards at every step of the way.
Iowa Public Radio's Joyce Russell is here with us now. Hello, Joyce.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being with us and having been on the floor. After the speech, what kind of a response are you hearing from Democrats?
Well, we spoke to a few Democrats. They're, in addition to hearing the speech today, they're also, just as we speak, getting their first look at the governor's budget. So that's where the rubber meets the road on where the money goes. But it was a generally nice bipartisan response to the speech. And as we were watching the speech, there were a number of times when there was a bipartisan standing ovation, and that doesn't happen that much. I think we probably saw more bipartisan standing ovations on this speech than we've seen for a while.
Interesting. Were there any surprises for you today?
No, because, well, you know, there are a few new things in his jobs package that are new. We've been talking about the education package for a while, so there are some new numbers on that, which I'll mention in a minute. But the jobs package has some new things in it. The suggestion that when a company is going to close a plant, there should be some tax incentives and other incentives to give the employees a chance to buy that plant. I think that's going to provoke some good discussion. Others are calling, you know, he's got a new, we had the Grow Iowa Values Fund under the Democrats. Well, they're giving that a different name. I'm not sure that's going to be all that much different. One Democrat said that every governor has the right to name his economic development program. So that's how that goes. And I'm sorry, we've got some feet. Hold on a second, and I'll see if we can get that turned down. But let's just keep talking, I guess.
All right. Well, let's get a little more response from listeners. Vint is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Vint. You also wanted to talk about the third grade assessment that the governor mentioned.
Yes, I did. Thank you for taking my call. We will be fortunate enough to be welcoming a 8-year-old foreign child. We're adopting a child this summer. He will arrive. His teacher tells us that he is a little bit slow in the third grade, but they attribute that not to any inherent problems, learning problems, but simply his situation in an orphanage, and they feel that once he has a stable, loving home, he will advance rapidly. But we are led to believe that it will take from 2 to 4 years for him to master both English and written and reading, English spoken and written and reading. And this young man, he's a big guy already. His parents must have been some of these Russian weightlifters or something. And so conceivably, we will have a 12-year-old adopted son in the third grade. And I don't think anyone has... The thinking behind this is very parochial, let's put it that way.
Well, and we did not hear the governor talk about English as a second language programs, which most of our schools, I think all of our schools have. So we didn't hear about him talk about any kinds of special circumstances in the proposal today. Chris, do you think that The governor was just basically giving us a bullet point, not talking about every program.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. With the case that Vint brings up are circumstances that the governor is going to have to address once he actually gets down to the budget and talking in details about the exact structure of the program.
But congratulations, Vint, and I hope your adoption goes extremely well. Rosie's on the line from Iowa City with a similar concern and something there's been a lot of controversy about in Iowa. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in regards to the governor this year had canceled a program called the Reading Recovery, which is a fantastic program that helps kids get a boost up on reading. He's canceled that program. Now the average kids, my kids went to Penn Elementary, and only 9 kids would get this special help. And now, and I had to fight for my kids. My son's recovering with autism, and I had to fight to get him special help. He gets 30 minutes of IEP a day. There's not enough funding for the kids who have special needs. This guy whose kids are from Russia, he's going to struggle. And there's the number of autism, number of ADD kids, they're not getting the help. And I don't hear and I don't see where the governor is talking about more funding coming into the schools to help these kids.
Rosie, thank you so much for that point. And Chris, we did not hear anything about special education today.
No, we didn't. And, you know, certainly special education has taken some significant cuts over the last couple of years. And so, again, these are details that Governor Branstad and his staff are going to have to work out and work with the legislature on. Otherwise, these are going to be very serious points of contention.
Joyce, let's get back to you. Earlier, Chris and I were talking a little bit about money because of the smaller amount of wiggle room that I guess we have with the budget this year because a 2-year budget was passed last year. So when people are hearing these proposals and thinking about where the money is going to come from, what are you hearing on that front?
Well, specifically on the education reform package, the governor had said already last week that he was going to ask for $25 million. 17 of that would be a new appropriation, and the other $8 million would be reappropriated from other programs. So the budget that he's unveiling today gave the specifics on that, $8 million are going to tap current programs on class size, reducing class size, and another program that goes into professional development for teachers. The governor's aides this morning said that there's a surplus of funds that school districts have for professional development. It'll surprise me tremendously if there isn't some pretty good pushback on that. I think the Democrats in the House especially, you can't talk to them about education without hearing them talk about professional development for teachers. So even if there is a surplus out there, there's going to be some tremendous pushback on that. And then, of course, class size, too. I think we're going to hear a lot of research on that, on how class size does or does not make a difference. At any rate, those are some of the programs they're going to tap to pay for their new reforms.
Well,
but I will say that most of the money in the new reforms is going to go for reading programs.
And it is interesting when you hear the governor talk about increasing standards for teachers and then taking away funds for professional development. That does seem to be a little contrary.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about that.
As you talked earlier, Chris and I talked about how very focused this speech was, that it was just jobs and education. Were there people that you talked to, that you heard from, Joyce, that said, you know, we didn't talk about some of the other really important issues that are out there right now?
No, I think in general, the response is bipartisan and cooperative, and those arguments are going to come later, I think. Although I'm hearing interesting things from your listeners just being on the line about what didn't get covered in the speech.
One of the things that he said in talking more broadly about the state is that he wants the state of Iowa to become, quote, a beacon of hope for the rest of the nation. When we look at Iowa compared to how the rest of the nation has fared during this economic downturn, Chris, what's your feeling about how Iowa has done in comparison?
Oh, if you look at other states, Iowa's actually done pretty well. You know, our unemployment rate, prior to the previous session was about 6.1%, and now we're down below 6. We're down to 5.7% unemployment rate. The economy is improving. We're having periods of growth. when you compare it to other states that are facing massive deficits, you know, if you look at California or Illinois or even Ohio and Indiana, which are continuing to struggle over collective bargaining, which is something that didn't come up in the governor's speech. I don't think we expected it to either. Iowa is actually doing extremely well. And so the economic climate around the governor's speech this morning was completely different than in November of 2000 and November and December of 2010 and January of 2011. And so I was actually doing quite well. And I was a little surprised that the governor didn't talk maybe a bit more optimistically about how the economy is improving.
And Joyce, when I hear you talking about a nice spirit of bipartisanship and people seem to be feeling good, I guess I'm hearing that coming from what Chris was saying, that people are feeling pretty good right now.
Well, it's true that the Iowa economy is turning around. The governor's, he didn't really talk about this in the speech, but the governor's aides in their budget briefing today are a lot more circumspect as far as it is beginning to turn around, but there are still a lot of drags on the Iowa economy, a lot of indicators that aren't turning upward. They put a chart up on the board. Six of the indicators pointed up, six of the indicators pointed down. And so while we're on the upswing, we're not really out of the woods yet.
Sean is on the line from Waterloo. Hello, Sean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. As I was listening to the governor's speech, and he had talked about needing to cut taxes in even like the property taxes, local and state, as well as small business and trying to keep businesses here and that kind of thing, which ideally, excellent idea. However, realistically, to actually cut taxes and not have that revenue from those areas of the state that we need it from, he proposes this uptick in the educational realm, where we're going to make things even better. We're going to have people learning better. We're going to give them more state of the art and that kind of stuff. I have a 5-year-old who's in a state of the art brand new school that's only like 2 years open, called Highland here in Waterloo, and he's in kindergarten. He's already not just learning to read, but specifically picking things up, vocabulary or I lost my train of thought. Either way, by kindergarten, he's already doing it. By first grade, he'll be reading at what I would consider like a second grade level because he's starting so early. Branstad says he wants to do this kind of thing. However, we need teachers and we need schools.
So your concern, Sean, is with cutting taxes that we're not going to be able to pay for these. And Joyce, you were talking about the numbers a little bit earlier. Chris and I were talking about the fact that the governor is spreading this property tax cut proposal out over 8 years now. Are there concerns from people saying, you know, what he says about education sounds good, but I don't know where the revenue is coming from?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, especially just even in this first year. Also concern about where the revenue is going to come from. I heard some specific sort of a wonderment about the human services budget as well. The budget for next year is a 4% increase, but there's and with most of the increases going to education and human services, also public safety. But there, you know, we're coming off of years of some pretty steep cuts.
Well, Joyce, we are out of time, but we will. I'm sure we'll hear a great deal more about these proposals as the legislature takes them up. Chris Larimer, thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa and Joyce Russell, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks again to Iowa Public Television today. This is Iowa Public Radio.